Thank you for joining us for this edition of Psychedelic Breakthrough Addiction Therapies. I am your host, Deborah Mash. The delight to be here today for our podcast on breaking the cycle of addiction. And I'm really, truly delighted to have with me Alex and Angela Hargrove. These are two people who are very dear and very special to me personally. Angela is director at Elego Health Research. She is an expert in the design and conduct of psychedelic clinical trials, and she has overseen the expansion of qualified trial networks. Alex Hargrove is an attorney. He's also an entrepreneur, an inventor who holds 3 patents and 1 pending. And he's co-founder and chief executive officer of the NetLaw Group and really an expert in estate planning. And again, as I mentioned, has really been in the forefront of this area. Angela and Alex have shared their personal journey through addiction to hope with an Ibogaine treatment. And many of you may not know much about Ibogaine, although it's a molecule that has been studied for over 100 years. And today, thousands of people in the have left the United States to seek a treatment with Ibogaine, where mostly in countries where it is unregulated. Alex was blessed by his Ibogaine journey, which he will share with us. For him, it was a one-and-done experience that was fostered in many ways by a loving and supportive family. Alex found his resilience, and he was able to break free from a downward struggle with alcohol and a prescription medication that was given to him called Adderall. Alex, most people don't understand addiction because of the stigma associated with using drugs and alcohol, and patients and families often get the right medical guidance when they look for a solution. And this is very much not your experience. You are a very successful man with a beautiful wife and very handsome and intelligent sons. Let's begin with your discussion about your personal history that led you to Ibogaine.
Sure. And thank you for having us on, Dr. Mash, and for that wonderful introduction. So I'll jump right in. My story, well, the key parts here began in law school. The prescription began in law school. I've long been sort of a ADHD type person. Didn't do very well in high school. Was the kid that liked to argue with the teachers, but got really bored, got into some trouble maybe. And sort of in college, I discovered how to. I had a professor of gifted studies there who sort of got me in a back door of an honors program. Really turned things around, learning how my mind worked. I learned how to use my ADHD for an advantage. Well, I got to law school and decided that's not going to work anymore. I went and met with a psychiatrist. He's like, sort of your way of managing this in college, is it going to work in sort of the upper echelons of trying to get into a big national law school? So I started an ADHD prescription for Adderall. That eventually led to, well, now I'm having anxiety. I'm having trouble sleeping. So let's add some Xanax in to take as needed. And then I'm taking Xanax 4 times a day, and then the Adderall's not working as well. So we're going to do Vyvanse in the morning. We're going to add Adderall in the afternoon. And that just sort of escalated to where I graduated law school, went to law school out in Virginia, hoping to practice in a big city and not with my father, who's an attorney. He ended up quitting his job at a big law firm around the time I graduated to start a company we'd been talking about that I didn't think he was actually going to do when I was in law school. So I went back and joined him and really jumped into the deep end in terms of the circumstances that could escalate an amphetamine addiction. I taught myself to code. I worked around the clock. I had this hyper ambition. He raised millions of dollars pretty quickly out of the gate. We won this American Bar Association award. And my life just revolved around this company, and the drugs were what, you know, fueled it. So I wasn't a party.
And you were a high flyer.
In terms of working, yeah, they allowed me just to work for hours on end. I can get hyper-focused now and I can work hours on end, but that sort of gave it to you on demand, right, for stuff that otherwise probably wouldn't have interested me quite as much. So, you know, I managed that better or worse over the years. I would have times where I overdid it or Xanax or alcohol or some combination a couple times, ended up in the hospital before I even met Angela. Angela didn't know this, of course. Angela met the guy who was good at having it together, usually 5 or 6 days of the week. I typically needed one day to sort of dry out, or really the weekend, so I could work hardcore and then I would just not take any medicine over the weekends. And sort of some days it'd be sweating it out because I'd introduce Kratom, and I had just different ways I found to sort of patch the gaps where the Adderall wasn't working as well anymore, or sort of fill in the days so I could take a few days off so it could keep working. So like better living through chemistry, right? But it wasn't better living. So I meet Angela. I couldn't take the weekend off anymore. She had two kids, one of whom I've since adopted. And we very quickly, she's a little bit older, maybe a moderately amount older than me. So she's like, hey, if we're going to do this family thing, we got to do it now. And I'd never been happier in my life than being dad to her youngest of those two. And then we now have a younger one, Austin. So I didn't get weekends anymore to sort of dry out. So it became, things sort of escalated at that point, all the way up until about, I think, a year after we met, maybe 2 weeks after Austin was born. I was trying to use a substance that I got off of Amazon called Phenibut to sort of titrate down my Xanax use. Phenibut, I ended up passing out at a stoplight with my son in the car, taking him to school. Hadn't slept in a couple of days, and I was just sort of manicky and thinking I was fine. And yeah, so I mean, that was, I ended up being in a coma for, I think,
3 days.
Three days. I mean, at that point, Angela's like, you know, we have a real problem here. I just had a baby with this guy. We had this sort of whirlwind romance. This doesn't look like it's going good places. And at the time, it wasn't going good places. And things just sort of got worse after that. You know, Angela, God bless her, she's like, this guy's got a great heart. She had been in an abusive relationship before with someone who had substance abuse. And she says, this is a different case. This guy really wants to be a good dad and wants to be all the things I want in a husband, but is just really struggling with doing that with these drugs. She worked in mental health and addiction at the time, knew lots of psychiatrists around the part of Kentucky we were living in at the time. And
my background's in science. I've worked in clinical research and mental health for over 30 years. So I'd never done psychedelics in my life, never even tried cannabis at that juncture in my 40s when we met. But Dr. Mash's work and your work, Dr. Mash, thank you. God bless you for all your valiant efforts through the years. I just started YouTubing and I found research that you had done, you know, your St. Kitts work and so forth. And that really opened my mind and made me comfortable with it. But I didn't want to.
So you call my parents, right? And are like, I think we should do this. I'm either going to bury him or yeah. I'm going to have to leave him. Yeah. And I don't like either of those options. So we went to Avante Institute in the Bahamas. It was hard. She called a bunch of them because at that time I had some diagnoses that wouldn't have lent themselves to taking Ibogaine. Like they thought, you know, I was having these manic incidents because we now know probably because of the medication that all the medication that I was taking, because I haven't had any of those in, you know, 6 years. She finally talked a clinic into, she's like, never had any of this before. I think it's all the medicine into taking me. They had strict rules around having to stop all the amphetamines. And at that time, I mean, my amphetamine use was really high. I mean, it's all legal, prescribed. I get it from Walgreens down the street, but it's the patch on top of the Vyvanse that you put in the water bottle in the morning and sort of sip throughout the day. And then it's the instant Adderall that sort of fills in the gaps where those aren't working right. So I was on a lot of amphetamines. So I had to take 2 weeks. So I had to stop taking those before we went. And that was just miserable. And getting me down to the Bahamas, getting me a passport. So we get to the clinic and, my amphetamines are still in my system. And they said we can't admit him in that case. And sort of just broke apart, begging a bit at their doorstep. And she says, well, we'll give you 24 hours. We'll go ahead and admit you, put you on stabilizing meds, and we'll give you 24 hours. And if you test negative for the Adderall, then we'll go ahead with the treatment. So thank God, 24 hours later, I tested negative and we went forward.
You go outside the United States, you get to take Ibogaine. It was a safe experience for you. Why do you think Ibogaine worked so well for you?
It was an interrupter. It's a term I think I've heard you use before, but you're sort of on this train wreck going one direction, and the stuff I was throwing at the train were just making it go faster, and maybe in a slightly different direction, but it was going to crash. So the Ibogaine stopped all that, and it gave me this clarity as if I hadn't been on all those drugs for that many years. I had a period of time and I realized it the next day. I mean, the experience itself was just, it's a blur. You know, I could tell some of the stories, but I think you can hear a lot of those stories. For me, it was the next morning, just it's over. And I get up and I'm like, oh my God, I think I'm better. I start hauling at the lady. I said, I think I'm better. Like something feels different. I think this actually worked. Holy cow. You know, this actually worked. And I saw Angela. I spent a couple days just sort of meditating and in a really quiet place, something I didn't typically do. And I see Angela and I've looked like Moses coming down from the mountain. My face is just shining. I've got this just huge smile. And, you know, it was a few days of crying, basically getting back, telling her the whole way back, just all these like, so happy. I have a family. I have kids. I go down this horrible path and here I am. And I feel normal. Like I feel joy and I don't need anything to feel that joy. And I have to say, your receptors get so burnt out that little things like a walk in the park don't feel great anymore. And then I got back from Ibogaine.
So it was a very rapid detox for you, considering the amount of prescription meds, the stress you were under. I mean, you were really kind of white knuckling at that point. And to go from a complete downward spiral to be spun dry, clean, and back into a place of clarity of mind, and also, you know, appreciation for all the gifts that, you know, God has given you in this lifetime. What a profound Ibogaine experience for you. Angela, you know, addiction is a family disease. When you love someone, and as an adult child of an alcoholic father who died, who never was able to break free from his alcoholism, died at 56, you know, I know the importance and the role of the family in trying to save someone you love. Can you share a little bit with us about your knowledge of the role of the family in addiction and recovery?
Right. And I'm so glad you brought that up because it's so vital for, you know, whether it's the spouse, the parents, the family member, friends, to, I think, learn as much about these breakthrough therapy options. You know, do your research. There's tons out there. Look at what, you know, your research. That's what I did. And try to understand it better. But spousal support, family support is vital in their recovery, vital to have that support system, even, you know, at the site. So I stayed off site. I did not stay at the treatment center with him. I stayed at a nearby hotel. As you know, it's crucial that it's an individual experience. He had to go through his own healing journey, but I was there for him afterwards. So as he stated, when we were reunited, I saw the light in his eyes. And from that point forward, you know, I said, I got you. We're going to get through this. And it is really important. So I made sure some things I did when we got back. I went to every doctor's appointment with him. He was still on Xanax. So although Ibogaine was, you know, wonderful in treating his Adderall addiction, he still had to overcome Xanax. And that took quite a while. So I went to every doctor's appointment with him. And every time the psychiatrist or his PCP would try to, well, they would try to give him more. And I'm like, no, we're getting him off this. Let's titrate him down. So that support system is vital. For those of you listening and you may not, you know, have any knowledge of psychedelics or Ibogaine in particular, again, of course, we had an infant at the time, you know, when we got back, you know, the little guy. But nonetheless, you know, even the children at their level, we explained dad's healing, you know, give dad space, dad's healing, let's be there for dad. But, and then Alex, I mean, it's just profound. It changed my life, you know, in such a profound way as well. Just seeing your transformation, it was just miraculous to go from, he literally, when I say he was on death's door, I thought we may have days, maybe weeks left with you alive, you know, I was going to bury you. It was frightening. You know, the trip was arduous. So that's why, you know, as you know, it's so important that we continue.
The fear of losing someone you love.
Yes. Yes.
And then I lived with that fear.
Yes.
I needed to get the phone call. And one day I did. This is why it is so profound for families to understand that although Ibogaine is not a silver bullet for most, mm-hmm. and Ibogaine is not a detox for Xanax withdrawal or benzodiazepines.
Correct.
Confusion about that.
Right.
Your healing journey began. You were able to break free of the cycle of addiction and to keep going, to keep going, to have that window of profound neuroplasticity that allowed you, and of course, you worked it.
Yeah,
all credit goes to you, Alex, because you're the one who worked it.
It's that play, you know, we just had the Super Bowl. It's that shift in momentum in your life where momentum's going this way and suddenly you get a shift. I don't actually even watch football, but, you know, a big play to stick with the analogy here. And everybody's filled with this new energy. And I mean, that's exactly what happened to me. Suddenly the wind's blowing against me. We're blowing at my back now, it felt like. And that was enough for me. And I had, you know, family in front of me and this ideal of being this great father that I wanted to live up to. And that was enough for me to do the work, to do the meditation, to, you know, I did long fasts. I mean, I did all sorts of sort of alternative running, just simple stuff. Like I became a distance runner, something I'd never done before to sort of help my mind return, you know, and get myself better. Yeah.
It got well and it was mind, body, and spirit.
It was.
That's a lesson that you're communicating to others. You got to work it. Ibogaine is an addiction interrupter. It's going to give you a window of opportunity, but you still, it's the high dive of recovery, but you still got to swim when you hit the water. You got to get the momentum and move forward. Angela, you gave profound testimony in Kentucky about your personal journey with Ibogaine and Alex and his success. We had a lot of, speaking of momentum, we had a lot of momentum with the Kentucky initiative and the thought that some of the money from the opioid settlement funds could be directed to accelerate the pace of clinical trials. As someone who works in clinical trials, as someone who has seen the importance of psychedelic medicines with the new approval that we're expecting to hear for MDMA, why do you think Kentucky backed away, and how did you feel about it personally?
Well, thank you. Thank you for commenting on that. We're both the native Kentuckians, as you know, so it meant a lot to us to be able to return to Kentucky, and for me to be asked to testify and share our family's journey was really profound, and profound to hear everyone that day. What I can tell you is that I'm heartbroken, honestly, very disheartening. We worked so hard. And in terms of the leadership that was in place, Brian Hubbard, he's outstanding and he fought for us every day. My prayer is that, you know, they'll pivot and they'll realize that these breakthrough therapies, you know, are a viable alternative to what we've been doing for years and years that, you know, it's frankly, it's a little insanity. We keep repeating the same thing and expecting different results. So my hope and prayer is that they do pivot, reconsider. And I honestly don't know how you sit through an entire day, and your testimony as well was extremely powerful. Thank you. Of listening to veterans and folks like Alex, whose lives have changed and are saved by Ibogaine medicine, not want to put it in a clinical trial. It blows my mind. I'm hopeful though that what we were able to accomplish in Kentucky thus far will be replicated in other states, and other states will use us as a beacon of hope and, you know, implement it and utilize some of those funds towards psychedelic research and especially Ibogaine research for addiction therapy. Yeah.
Now, the end of the year was hard for me too. Having worked on this for 30 years, of dedicated effort, I thought I was seeing the light at the end of the tunnel, and that we would have, you know, the dollars to accelerate the pace of research. I think the new publication by the Stanford group, pioneering Lynn Williams and his collaborators at Stanford, and this incredible information that was shared, the clinical outcome data that was shared in our veterans, men and women who had multiple deployments in Operation Enduring Freedom and Iraqi Freedom. The fact that many people in Congress have had sons or daughters affected by addiction. I don't think you can be one degree of separation from someone that you love in your family who's not affected. This is such a plague on our society. At the fentanyl numbers today, you know, a plane crash a day of opioid intoxication deaths. And it doesn't matter where you go. And Kentucky, what a tragedy.
Right.
Right.
When you put it that way with the plane crash, it's just mind-boggling. But yeah, our home state, which has just been so disproportionately impacted by the opioid crisis. So again, I do pray and hope that they will change their minds and reconsider their stance and realize that we need more clinical trials. Clinical trials and Ibogaine, it's crucial to get these drugs through the FDA into the hands of people. People are dying every day. And as Alex mentioned, the trip is arduous to leave the country when one is so sick. I literally was holding him up. He's a strong man now, what you're seeing today, but what you didn't see all those years ago, he was on death's door and he was weak and he was going through detox and he was, just to get the passport, it's truly a miracle that we made it there. Mm-hmm. And I'm just thank God every day that they accepted you and treated you, but not everybody has the funds and the resources to leave the country or even the knowledge. And so it's vital to get this, as you know, oh my gosh, it's vital that we push this and reform and get it into clinical trials and the FDA. I hope you're listening, because my husband, I said this today, you know, when I testified, but I don't think Alex would be alive today had we not taken that leap of faith, left the country and tried an alternative therapy called Ibogaine.
Because this has happened to other people, other families, other people have had their child in the back seat of the car. Mm-hmm. I have that in my own family. I just was dealing with something similar recently with someone who is very dear to me and that I love very much. So, and brand new baby in the back seat.
Yeah. And so, you know, thank God it was just the car was stopped.
Thank God, me coming back
and becoming dad. The dad he needs has just transformed his life. Our other kids are thriving. My wife is thriving. So it's not just my life. It's my whole that this lifted up. And, you know, there's a lot of states out there still that have lots of money, as I understand it, from the opioid settlements. And so I see Kentucky is obviously a setback. But at the same time,
maybe it's a setup.
Maybe
learn from Kentucky. And maybe even though we on this podcast, we're heartbroken at the end of the year that we didn't win, but maybe it's not really a setback. Maybe there is a butterfly effect, and maybe other states and academic universities and other stakeholders will come to support us. And we need some smart attorneys behind us as well to help ensure success. This has been a really enjoyable podcast today. You know how much I love both of you and how you inspire me to keep the battle cry going forward for Ibogaine. And I want to give the FDA a shout out, because the FDA has always been collaborative, are very intelligent, well-meaning clinicians and scientists who really want to ensure the safety of Americans that are taking investigational drugs. I want to mention that Ibogaine is an investigational drug, and to the families that are seeking a treatment because others have failed the standard of care, please know that you need to do your homework. You heard from Angela. She researched it. She got to the experts. She asked the tough questions. You must do this. You must be healthy enough to take the drug. There are risks, but there are wonderful successes. Final word from the two of you. What do you want to say to our listeners?
First of all, I want to thank you, and we love you so much, and you know how much we admire and respect you. And oh my gosh, we just couldn't say enough here on this podcast about you. But do you want to have a word?
We need to accelerate Ibogaine. There are risks, like you said. There's in technology, there's a lot of talk of risks of AI and risks of that. And I'm sort of the optimist that believes we need to accelerate these things because they're going to solve more problems than the risk. You know, the benefits outweigh the risk. And I think you have to do that equation here. The risk, I would have taken it 100 times over if I had to go back and make the same decision, because there was no other option for me.
That's a powerful final statement. Alex and Angela Harger, thank you so much for sharing your personal journey and thank you for helping to explain to others how they can break the cycle of addiction with Ibogaine. Thank you.